Thank you very much for the opportunity to address this really important meeting. Lauren Rogers, who you'll hear from the National Centre of Employee Ownership in the States, is going to talk to you a bit more about the why employee ownership, why employee share ownership is a good thing. I'm going to talk about more about the what you need to establish employee ownership in the mainstream. And when I talk about employee ownership, I'm talking about what Tony Smith described as the joint ownership, the co-ownership approach. And my basic message to you is, if you want to get the best out of employee ownership, I think you really need to leapfrog what you're doing here in the UK. You need to move from thinking just about employee share schemes to thinking about employee ownership as it's defined in the Nuttall Review. That's the way to turbocharge what you're going to do here in Australia. This is quite a challenge speaking to you today. It was quite a challenge answering the UK government's call to identify all the obstacles to promoting employee ownership in the UK and coming up with all the solutions. But at least I had home advantage. I'm dual qualified. I'm a solicitor. I'm also a chartered tax advisor. And I have a career-long practice of advising new employee-owned companies and maintaining employee ownership in existing companies. Here, you're asking me to explain what's important about establishing employee ownership in a different jurisdiction. What do I mean about employee ownership? What do I mean by employee ownership? When my review was announced in the UK, there was some confusion in the press. Some of the press reports assumed I would be talking about executive pay. Others assumed I'd be talking about merely delivering tax advantage breaks to all employees. But it's not that. My vision of employee ownership is a much broader vision. And following the confusion, I asked our Deputy Prime Minister, Nick Clegg, to confirm in his next speech exactly what was meant by employee ownership. And he put it succinctly, as politicians do. We're talking about a big chunk of the company belonging to a significant number of staff. In the Nuttall Review, we adopted a more legalistic, but still very broad-based definition. Employee ownership means a significant and meaningful stake in a business for all its employees. And what's meaningful goes beyond financial participation. And the employee's stake must underpin organisational structures that promote employee engagement in the company. So do I really mean all employees? Actually, yes. The Nuttall Review obviously has some small print in it. I'm a lawyer, I can't resist a bit of the small print. The small print, it's voluntary. Nobody's going to be forced to take shares in their company. Also, it's perfectly acceptable to have a qualifying period of employment. It may be a new recruit has to wait 6 months, 12 months, 18 months before they can share in this ownership arrangement. And also, entitlements can vary, perhaps according to length of service, level. But the essence of this is that it's something that should be available to all employees. Now, in practice, that may not be possible, immediately. And the research suggests that, I refer here to a report, that actually you can get good effects if you get 60% of all employees participating. But the headline is, I'm really thinking about all employees in a business having a stake in it. And what do I mean by significant? Again, there's no set percentage, but I'm not talking about 1 or 2% of the shares. If you speak to the UK Employee Ownership Association, you will find that the members there think very much in terms of a controlling stake, over 50%. That's what the goal is for the members of the Employee Ownership Association. So you then have an employee-owned company. But again, the statistics are there to suggest that you can get the benefits of employee ownership at much lower levels of share ownership. And indeed, my firm has collated and publishes an index of the share prices of listed companies with 10% or more employee ownership. And that excludes directors. We're just talking about employees as a whole. And remarkably, since we started tracking that, as you can see from the graph, the top line is the performance of those listed companies with more than 10% employee ownership, and it's always the trend is always to outperform the FTSE All Share Index, which suggests even for listed companies, there's something that can be achieved through acquiring a significant stake, for employees acquiring a significant stake. I referred to employee engagement. You can get great employee engagement in companies without employee share ownership. My message is that you get the best outcomes if you align employee engagement with employee ownership. On the left-hand side here, you have the list of employee engagement drivers as set out in a key government report, the McLeod report. And for all of those, I would say that they work better, they make more sense if you have employee ownership. Employees tend to be cynical. If their manager asks them for their view, they're more likely to think, oh, he's only asking me because he's got an appraisal coming up and he's got to be able to tick the box to say, have you spoken to all your staff this week? With an employee-owned company, there's an answer to that cynicism. He's asking me because it's our business. He's got to ask me. This is the way our business works. When I talk about employee ownership, I'm talking about a conventional-looking company. I'm talking about a share capital company, the sort that you would recognise. I'm talking about it having a board of directors that are professional managers. Now, it is possible to establish an employee-owned company as a social enterprise, but it doesn't have to be that way. Almost all the members of the Employee Ownership Association in the UK are typical, normal, for-profit companies. Similarly, it doesn't have to have a highly consultative ethos to it, in which every employee in the company is consulted over what sort of toilet paper to buy. It is a conventional run company. Decisions are made efficiently. And there is a concern in the UK, among some trade unionists, that actually employee ownership is all about de-unionisation. But that's just not the case. There are employee-owned companies. There's a particular paper manufacturing company, Tullis Russell, which has heavy, significant employee engagement from the trade unionists alongside employee engagement through the employee ownership structure. The two work together. I talk about this stake in the business underpinning organisational structures. There are no hard and fast rules as to what are the right structures, but the research suggests that if you're really to get the best out of this arrangement, then there are three levels of driving that performance. There's the individual financial participation, an employee getting something extra in addition to pay, something that comes out of the ownership structure, in effect a dividend for being employee-owned. Also, the ability for individuals to speak up in that organisation, to have a voice in the organisation, one that's listened to. That's the reference here to participative mechanisms. But possibly the key ingredient is to pull those together and to have a collective voice. Again, the individual employee can be cynical and can say, well, actually, my manager's only listening to me because I'm a brilliant person or I'm particularly eloquent. What makes it really work is the feeling of we're all being listened to. Now, it is the staff as a whole that are being listened to. We have a collective voice in how the organisation is run. And the shared company report, I refer here to the EOA, that's the UK Employee Ownership Association. It has a website. You can download copies of reports and other documents I refer to from that website. And the EOA in the UK is a trade association for companies with significant employee ownership, for employee-owned companies. The UK government has unequivocally stated that it is in favour of promoting employee ownership. In January last year, our Deputy Prime Minister, Nick Clegg, said the UK coalition government's aim is to get employee ownership into the bloodstream of the British economy. It's a great idea. We have decades of success stories in the UK. The UK government got behind those success stories and said, we want to make it mainstream. And I was asked, what's necessary? I did suggest that a commission might be more effective, but the reply came back, we think we can get this done quicker if it's just you writing the report. You don't need to consult with anybody. You just write down what we need. I did talk to a few people in arriving at my conclusions, but a very efficient way of working. So let me talk through what I think it would mean in practice if employee ownership is in the mainstream in Australia and New Zealand. This is my vision. It's the vision of that I want to see realised in the UK, but I think it's international. And in terms of what's needed, when preparing the slides, I was struggling to think of what to call these, so I called them the Not All 12. Be grateful for any suggestions. Essentially, these are building blocks. These are foundation stones. When employee ownership is in the mainstream, these will exist. And then I'll say a bit about how it can be achieved, at least by looking at the UK experience and giving you some ideas. So what would mainstream employee ownership mean in practice? I think in the papers that will be made available to you, you'll get this extract from the Nuttall Review. I can't read it. I'm not expecting you to be able to read it. At the start of the report, I set out a case study. I took the example of the owner of a successful private trading company with no one in his family able or willing to succeed him, who goes to his local advisor, whether a solicitor or an accountant, and says, tell me about my succession solutions. Tell me what I can do about the future of my business. And by the way, I don't want to have to sell this business that I've built up over years to my lifelong competitor. Come up with something else. And I want to realise again, I'm not altruistic, but show me a future for my business. I've heard about this employee ownership. What do I do? And my vision is that the professional advisor, the bank, the accountant, the solicitor would all come together and would say, yes, employee ownership is a neat succession solution. Here's how you do it. Part of the vision is also that the tax authorities would be there to provide support at key points in this process, key assurances to make it happen. So if you look at the business as a unit and those who are working to make it a success, those immediately involved in it, on the left-hand side, I've got this, the key individuals, and the vision would be that employers and owners know about employee ownership. They completely get it. They completely understand the idea. The UK experience, at least before the Nuttall Review, was actually one of chance. The only way that individuals came across this idea was the fact that they happened to have worked at another employee-owned company sometime in their career, or a friend of theirs had, or there's an amazing number who've reinvented the wheel, who've come up with the idea that actually employees contributed to the success of building up this business, therefore they should have a stake in it, and then come to me or another professional advisor and say, no, I've reinvented the wheel. Can you, put it on a car and make it happen? It should not be that way. It should be the case that it's out there as a solution, just as we've heard about franchising, just as we know that if you want to set up a charity, there's a body of experts, there's a body of advice out there. And so it should be the same with employee ownership, with employee buyouts. Everybody should know about it. And managers should not be suspicious of this. Managers should actually say, great, I want to work in an employee-owned company because my life is much easier. Employees have full information of how the business runs. If I've got difficult decisions to make, I know that I'll be able to get a fair hearing from the employees when I'm talking to them about it. They shouldn't be treated with suspicion. Whereas at the moment, the reality is no manager is ever trained in employee ownership as part of their training course, and it's extremely unlikely anyone will have had practical experience of it. As far as employees go, if an employee thinks of this idea, there's absolutely no guidance in the UK at the moment as to what they should do. An employee may suspect that they get sacked if they raise the idea because it's a bit revolutionary. We're breaking through that barrier. We hope to have official guidance from ACAS, from our conciliation and advice service for employers and employees, official guidance published soon to assure employees that it's good for business to raise this idea. And you can be safe in the knowledge that you won't be turfed out of the room as soon as you mention the idea of buying a stake in the business or being given a stake in the business. Similarly, professional advisors, we've got to move away from the mindset that the only succession solution is a management buyout, a trade sale or a float, or just wind the company up and have an asset sale. We've got to get out there the idea that there's another neat exit. Your employees can take this business on. And as for lenders and investors, we don't want them saying, what? What are you talking about? What's an employee-owned company? We want them to say, we recognise that as an asset class. We know what the risks and rewards are. We know how difficult it is or how easy it is to lend, to provide equity finance to that particular business. So that's the vision in relation to the particular business and the nucleus of those who advise it and keep it successful. But it's bigger than that. If employee ownership is to be part of the mainstream, then you need the wider business community, the wider economy, to be backing this idea. Currently, I have to say in the UK, certainly before the Nuttall Review, it was not a mainstream idea. There was no education in it, very few courses available that dealt with employee ownership. Trade unions, as I've mentioned already, there is policy centrally from the TUC on what is good employee ownership, but equally, particularly at national level, with some unions, there's this suspicion that actually employee ownership is about derecognition. With professional bodies, I've mentioned the blank looks you can get from advisors if you go in and say, I want an employee buyout. I think it's more deep-seated than that. Throughout the UK economy, we revere the PLC monoculture. This is an expression in the Ownership Commission report, also published last year. It's the idea that you're only successful as an entrepreneur or a director if you've built your company up, you've had some private equity investment, you've had a trade sale, and you've listed the company. Well, there are other routes to success. We need a much more balanced economy in which other types of businesses are recognised. And there is a bigger message here. This is really about diversity in the economy. It's about somebody coming in to their professional advisor and saying, what's the right ownership and governance structure for my business? It's not about saying, I'm thinking of working in the social enterprise area. Oh, you've got to be a charity. Or I'm setting up my business. Oh, you've got to be a listed for-profit company with conventional share capital ownership. It's about adopting a much broader approach and saying, as part of this range of business models, employee ownership is something to be considered. Financial institutions in the UK, there are a few specialist funders, but again, this needs to be mainstream. We need every bank, every financial institution to have its employee ownership financing policy. And the media, I explained when the Nuttall Review was launched that the initial press articles got it wrong. They just did not get what my review was going to be talking about. And there's been some improvement. I'll show you some articles later on from journals that do understand what this message is about. But again, there's a large section of the press that is really only interested in bad news or is on controversy. And some of you may have picked up on the fact that our Chancellor of the Exchequer announced an extremely controversial measure, shares for rights. This has now been enacted. There is a tax break for employees who give up certain employment rights. Unsurprisingly, this did not find favour amongst the employee ownership sector. In fact, it's hard to find anybody who is in favour of this idea of undermining employment law rights. Employee ownership is all about enhancing experiences as an employee, not about asking you to take greater risks. But it does work as a niche measure. I can see that it might be attractive in some fast-growing businesses where perhaps key individuals are prepared to take a risk on sacrificing employment rights in return for tax breaks. I know you're reviewing that particular area here in Australia and what could be done to incentivise fast-growing businesses. Well, one can look at this measure. But given what I've heard today about regulation in relation to employee share schemes, it seems to me you're keener on regulating rather than deregulating. But the one good thing about this is that for every adverse mention of the Shares for Rights proposal, there was also a mention for employee ownership. So actually, it generated more publicity for employee ownership by way of contrast. So maybe one of the tactics here in Australia for raising awareness of employee ownership is to put up a measure that is so controversial that in response to that, everybody says, oh, let's please go for employee ownership instead. And then finally, the public. In the UK, we have an extremely well-known department store, the John Lewis Partnership, and extremely well-known supermarket chain, Waitrose. And for many years, they have been Britain's favourite shop, although actually in a recent survey, and they're employee-owned, that's the point of it. Since the 1920s, John Lewis Partnership has been owned collectively through an employee trust on behalf of the employees. So although it calls itself a partnership, no employees are actually partners in the business. No employees actually own voting shares in the business. Instead, it's all held collectively. And this has provided continuity and growth and success for decades. However, in the last poll of what was Britain's favourite shop, I noticed that IKEA had overtaken John Lewis. So even in relation to this flagship store, one still needs to keep the message going that employee ownership is great. And I've not finished. The vision. This is where Employee Ownership Australia and New Zealand fits in. And this is where the other organisations that I've met over recent days fit in. Every sector needs its trade associations, needs its research institutes. And actually, from what I've heard, you've got a tremendous opportunity to leapfrog into a position where you have a coordinated sector speaking as one voice, promoting different business models, alternative business models to the PLC, with employee ownership firmly part of that sector, including social enterprises, including worker cooperatives. In the UK, we have a number of organisations, and they're all doing great work. But one of my recommendations is that actually we do need an institute in the UK to provide some coordination. But I think you've got an opportunity here to work in a coordinated way right from the start. And still part of the vision, the politicians. The success of the Nuttall Review has depended on political support. We would not have achieved what we have achieved in the UK without political support, without support in particular from the government. And this support has been overwhelming. We were talking about awarding points earlier. Well, the UK government gets 10 out of 10 for providing policy support since January last year for this whole area of employee ownership. I wrote out a wish list, and everything on the wish list has been satisfied, essentially. The UK Parliament has always had all-party support for this concept of employee ownership. That may sound strange to you in Australia, but actually all our political parties find something good in employee ownership, whether it's Labour, Liberal, Democrat, Conservative, whatever the party you belong to, there's something in your heritage that speaks well of employee ownership. And we have the launch of a paper in the UK Parliament, and it's amusing as each politician vies for the centre stage, saying, no, this is our policy. Labour are behind the Rochdale Pioneers. This is a vision of cooperatism. And then the Conservatives saying, actually, no, this is just a development of Thatcherism. We're developing capitalists here. We're developing an awareness of capitalism. And the Liberal Democrats saying, no, this is about a fairer society, about a more balanced society. So I don't know what works for you here in Australia, but certainly for us, the all-party parliamentary group getting behind this concept has worked very well. Government came out in support of this. The coalition government repeated its support in its mid-term review in January. There's a government department, the Cabinet Office, which has taken a particular interest in what are called public service mutuals. This is the idea that you can reform the delivery of public services by taking them out of the state and putting them into an employee-owned or employee-led organisation with a contract back from the state to pay for those services, public service mutualisation, it has worked well. Nurses and therapists delivering community care are much more efficient at doing it when they're in charge of their own budget, where they're in charge of their own destiny, and they're not subject to the whims of their primary care trust changing priorities partway through the year. And the Cabinet Office has its own mutuals information service, a web-based service, and official ambassadors for this particular project. The Department for Business, Innovation and Skills is the department that I have reported to in relation to the Nuttall Review. It now has an implementation group chaired by Joe Swinson, the Minister for Employee Ownership, and she is responsible with her civil servants for working with the sector and others to implement the Nuttall Review recommendations. Even HM Treasury is on side. They conducted their own internal review of employee ownership in parallel to my review, and there were favourable comments about employee ownership in last autumn statement. And in the March budget, there was a line in the budget dedicated to implementation of the Nuttall Review, £50 million per annum from 2014 to 15. From having nothing to having £50 million is a big step. Say a little bit more about that later on. And even our tax authorities, HM Revenue and Customs, who have had to deal with a lot of abuse in relation to employee share plans and in particular employee trusts over the years, have this year come out publicly with the statement that, yes, there are genuine employee trusts that are part of a genuine business model. It's not all about tax avoidance. And there's a bigger picture as well. We're reforming Royal Mail. There's a plan to provide external finance for it alongside a 10% stake held by employees. The post office is being mutualised. There's a vision there for creating an ownership structure, a hybrid multi-stakeholder ownership structure in which sub-postmasters and employees and the public all own and drive the post office, drive the future of the post office. So what are the key themes that I identified in the Nuttall Review that were getting in the way of promoting employee ownership in the UK? A lack of awareness. I've mentioned this already. A profound lack of awareness in all aspects of the UK economy of this concept of employee ownership. Also, a lack of resources to support employee ownership. I spoke about the difficulty of finding finance. And then the actual or perceived legal and tax regulatory complexities of employee ownership. And I suspect that these are similar themes that resonate here in Australia. So what's needed? In relation to awareness, clear terminology is important. We got tangled up in definitions at the start of the Nuttall Review. And I'm not planning to read through all these here, but you need some clear terminology. You need the government, you need those involved in promoting the sector to all start using the same terms and have a clear understanding of what it means. So, for example, when I refer to an employee benefit trust, I mean a discretionary trust for the benefit of employees of a company or a group of companies. No employee actually has an interest in any shares. The shares are held collectively by trustees who, under trust law, must act in the best interests of those employees. In the UK, we have various tax-advantaged share plans which allow employees to acquire shares in a variety of ways tax-efficiently, a combination of share options and share awards. And two of these plans must be offered to all employees. So we have this distinction between share plans which could be offered to everybody and perhaps typically are only offered to a select few, and then tax-advantaged share plans that must be offered to all employees on a same or similar terms basis. I've mentioned the UK public service mutual concept, this idea of taking a service out of state control and delivering it through a new entity, which involves employees having a high degree of control over that entity. UK employee shareholder status, that's the Chancellor's measure, the controversial measure that I mentioned. And again, our Deputy Prime Minister, in another speech this year, very helpfully explained that employee shareholder status should be seen as very separate in terms of content and scale from employee ownership. He actually called it a niche measure, which again is very helpful in conveying clear messages to the media, to everybody involved in this space, using clear definitions. We also need a clear understanding of classifications. These are the classifications I set out in the Nutter Review of the different types of employee ownership, and the UK government has started using these expressions. Essentially, there are three forms of employee ownership. Direct employee ownership by employees using tax advantage share plans or other types of share plans if you want greater flexibility. And then indirect employee ownership where it is through a trust, where the trust collectively owns those shares on behalf of employees. And then mixing the two together. And in my experience, everybody approaching employee ownership almost knows instinctively what is right for them, particularly owners looking at this from a succession point of view. They'll know what's best for their business. Sometimes there's a feeling that employees have got to buy shares. They've actually got to invest, dare I use this word, after the presentation this morning on regulation. But you know, employees have actually got to buy shares to get the benefits of employee ownership. Whereas for others, they're much more attracted to the idea of the John Lewis model of collective ownership. It's much simpler. There are fewer moving parts. As employees join and leave, they automatically become part of the structure. And then there are others who like the mix, who like the idea of saying, OK, there's a blocking vote, 26%, 51% in an employee trust, and then we get the direct ownership benefits by running a tax advantage share plan alongside that. The benefits of employee ownership have got to be understood. The Nutter Review summarised these. I urge this to become your mantra, you know, particularly for politicians, when you're being interviewed. What are the benefits of employee ownership? It's a winning combination of improved business performance, increased economic resilience, greater employee engagement and commitment, and it drives innovation. And also, it enhances employee well-being and reduced absenteeism. In other words, a winning combination of greater business outcomes and happier staff. I looked at some statistics from a Cass Business School report. There's a concern about retaining jobs, about achieving growth. And the Cass Business School, in a study published early in 2010, compared employee-owned companies with non-employee-owned companies, and they found that job creation and sales growth was significantly better in employee-owned companies in the period 2008-2009 than an earlier period, 2005-2008. Now, you'll appreciate the significance of that date in terms of when the financial crisis, when the economic problems started to hit. In the period 2008-2009, in employee-owned companies, the growth in employee numbers in employee-owned companies in that period was 12.91%. In non-employee-owned companies, it was 2.7%. A 10% difference in growth in employee numbers in a difficult period in the UK economy. Also in sales growth, it's a similar, astonishingly significant difference. Sales growth in those employee-owned companies in that very difficult period, 2008-2009, was 11.08%. What was it in the non-employee-owned companies? Less than 1%, 0.61%. Again, a more than 10% difference. And the Cass Business School, I think, attributed this to one of the great characteristics of employee-owned companies. They seem to be much better at judging risk. They seem to be much better at taking a longer-term view, much more confident about expanding in difficult economic times and not taking on absurd risks when the going looks good. They seem much better at managing risk. I think that's the key to understanding those differences and that performance. And these outcomes, these benefits, again, this is an important part of the mantra. I believe that they're relevant at every stage of the business life cycle. They work in startups, they work at achieving growth, they work as a succession planning solution, they work in business rescues. And I believe they work across all sectors in all sizes of business. So this really is a powerful winning combination. And if employee ownership is in to be is to be in the mainstream, everybody needs to understand this. This needs to be common knowledge. Success stories. It's difficult listening to me. I'm a professional advisor. It's difficult to convey the enthusiasm that employee owners have for their businesses. I'd urge you to meet employee owners, to invite them over here, to talk to them, to travel to the UK to meet successful employee-owned companies, because it's success stories that really push this message. And thankfully, the UK press is now picking up a lot more on success stories. These are recent companies where I've been involved in promoting employee ownership. Centre is a startup, an engineering partnership. Someone who'd got fed up working in subsidiary companies that were bought and sold, he vowed when he started up his own business, everybody was going to have a stake in it. So he set up a new business with employee ownership. Top right, it says pharmacy adopts employee ownership. This is a community pharmacy with an elderly generation of pharmacists who own this community pharmacy. They see it as a succession solution. They want that community pharmacy to remain open every day of the year since it was founded, and I think the 1960s. It's been open every day of the year. They want that continuity, and they see selling their shares to an employee trust as the way to achieve that continuity. There's another example there of a public service, again, council staff taking their own responsibility for delivering a service, for delivering it better, getting better outcomes for their customers. And this bottom right is a reference to Parfitts, which is a succession solution situation where a family sold a controlling stake in their cash and carry business to an employee trust. Loads of great examples, and these are all building on the long-established examples of the John Lewis Partnership, of Swan Morton and others. So the success stories are getting known in the UK. The UK Employee Ownership Association is a thriving organisation. It has calculated there's been a 10% growth in employee ownership in the UK over the last year. The Cabinet Office has a public service mutuals map. There are 65 public service mutuals so far. I believe there are another 100 in the pipeline. The cooperatives similarly produce a map showing cooperatives in the UK. So great publicity for success stories. Also part of raising awareness. You can't really do without it. You need government to accept that employee ownership is a good thing. And at this stage, I'm not asking for incentives. I'm not asking for tax breaks. I'm just asking for the government to say, and for politicians in all parties to say, we think employee ownership is a good thing. As you can see, the UK employee ownership sector has got some great quotes here. I mentioned Nick Clegg, the Deputy Prime Minister. These quotations all came from the 30th of October official response to the Nuttall Review, the point at which the government said, yes, we are accepting in whole or in part all of your 28 recommendations. And we had endorsement across the board from the Deputy Prime Minister, BIS, our Department for Business, Innovation and Skills, and from the Cabinet Office. And this endorsement has been repeated again this year. The founder of the UK Employee Ownership Association was Robert Oakeshott, who's instrumental in getting me involved in employee ownership and many others in the UK. And in the inaugural memorial lecture in memory of Robert, the UK Deputy Prime Minister again came out with a keynote speech in favour of employee ownership, explaining the policy lines here. He wants to create a fairer society which distributes its rewards, to create a stronger economy which is diverse and sustainable, a stronger economy shared by all. 5, there needs to be an evidence base. HM Treasury, others do like to see the evidence. And thankfully, there is a growing body of evidence. I would say there's enough out there to make policy decisions in favour of employee ownership without asking for more. A whole series of reports here referred to also, there's some extra reading also referred to in the Nuttall Review. We're now getting on to a bit more of the practicalities. If employee ownership is to be in the mainstream, you need the toolkits to enable this to happen. You remember my division, my categorisation of employee ownership into direct, indirect and hybrid. You need a mechanism for collective employee ownership. This slide refers to giving shares to a trust. It refers to a trust subscribing for shares. This is really just the starting point. I wanted to get the idea out there of how an employee trust could work. Typically, you'd have the trust document, you'd have a trustee company acting as trustee of that trust, and perhaps you'd have a founder wanting to kickstart things by giving a few shares into the trust to show their seriousness, and perhaps a company making some cash contributions so it could buy some more shares in the trust. And what's important is to have out there readily available legal documents, readily available tax advice, so somebody can come in and say, I want to implement the employee trust model of employee ownership, and it's easy to do. Similarly, you need the direct employee ownership toolkits. So if somebody comes in and says, look, I want to get shares into the hands of employees, how can I do that? In the UK, we've got this great suite of tax advantage plans. There's something in there for everybody. There's some way of getting shares into the hands of employees. Also, very much into the home straits now. Point eight, you know, building up these resources. You do need an aligned employee engagement agenda. It's very easy for those who have an interest in employee engagement to forget employee share ownership, to forget employee ownership, and to concentrate on the mechanics of speaking to staff without actually thinking about the ownership and governance arrangements. The report I mentioned earlier had an important statement in it. Employee ownership is a profound and distinctive enabler of high engagement. That's got to be at the forefront of the minds of everybody involved in employee engagement. Unfortunately, in the UK, follow-up report by the Employee Engagement Task Force failed to mention employee ownership. So one's got to keep on with the message. Financing solutions. Clearly, if you're locking up the equity in a company for the benefit of employees, there is a risk if equity is needed to finance the business and is needed from third parties. And so investors and financial institutions do need to be tuned in to the financing requirements of employee-owned companies. And instead, perhaps investing on the basis that there will be a sale of that business in 3 or 4 years' time. They need to invest perhaps through preference share capital, through more patient means of getting a reward from a business. And again, we've seen some signs of movement in the UK in this area, developing greater awareness of the financing requirements needed by employee-owned companies. I come back to professional expertise and experience. It's so important that there's a body of know-how out there amongst solicitors, accountants and other professionals so that anybody wanting to do this has the resources available to them. And perhaps perhaps this is a bigger point in Australia than I'd anticipated. Clearly, one's got to ensure that there are no legal, tax or regulatory obstacles that get in the way of employee ownership. Again, I'm not talking here about incentives. I'm just talking about a level playing field. I'm talking about being able to operate what for me are fair and reasonable commercial structures without tax law or without company law getting in the way. And we've got a favourable environment in the UK. There was very little that I needed to say about levelling the playing field in the UK. But the UK government has shown its support. There was a particular area in relation to share buybacks. And as a result of the Nuttall Review, this section of the Companies Act has been rewritten to make it much easier for companies to buy shares back. The typical approach in the UK to creating an internal market in shares has been to set up an employee trust. And these changes make it possible, if you don't want an employee trust, to look at share buybacks as a way of creating that internal market. Finally, Of course, it helps to have a government that provides incentives. Now, all economies are struggling with the cash flow. All exchequers are looking closely at where the money is spent. The UK government, in its budget, put in a line about the £50 million being available annually. What it also said, and this is a tremendous vote of support for employee ownership, it said that there would be capital gains tax exemption if anybody sells a controlling stake in a company to an employee trust from the 6th of April 2014. Currently, there's a pretty good regime. Most owner-managers will only have to pay tax at 10% if they sell a stake in their business to anybody. And what I argued is that if you want to raise the profile of employee ownership, you need something extra for professional advisors to think about and talk about. And the bottom line is, if they fail to mention employee ownership now, it's professional negligence. I said earlier, a bit of controversy is a way to raise awareness. From 6th of April 2014, anybody going in to see their solicitor and accountant who says, talk to me about succession solutions, that advisor has got to say, have you thought about selling a controlling stake to an employee trust? Very much going to put employee ownership on the agenda. You've been very patient. I think I've got a few more minutes. You'll be pleased to know that I'm not going to go through in detail and cross-reference each of the Nuttall 12 against the Nuttall Review. But as you'll see, in the UK, I mapped a whole series of recommendations against each of these building blocks, against each of these foundation stones. And the UK government has come out in support of those recommendations and say, yes, we will work to build these foundations. We will work to put employee ownership into the mainstream in the UK. And so we come on to the how. I've described the what I think you need. Clearly, it's for you locally to work out the how. But by way of a bit of a start, here's an example of a few of the things that are happening in the UK. Clearly, we built on what we had locally. We had a great suite of tax advantage share plans, and we had the experience of government in the success of public service mutuals. On top of that, we now have this drive to promote employee ownership. And the process we went through in the UK was essentially after the keynote speech from the Deputy Prime Minister in January, I was appointed, and I've explained the democratic process by which I was allowed to write my report. No need to consult with a committee, just get on and do it. I did carry out an informal consultation through BIS. It was informal so that we didn't have to follow the usual guidelines on formal consultations. HM Treasury, in parallel to that, said it would conduct an internal review into employee ownership, which is, of course, typical of treasuries around the world. They want to keep control of policy, and there was no promise as to what the outcome of that internal review would be. But in the meantime, BIS carried on with raising awareness through consultation processes in relation to some of my recommendations, building up to the formal response on the 30th of October, in which the government said, yes, it endorsed employee ownership and my recommendations. We then had in the autumn statement HM Treasury reporting the key outcomes from its review, essentially a positive piece in the autumn statement about looking further into employee ownership and the possibility of tax incentives and other incentives. Reconfirmation in the midterm review in January that yes, employee ownership is very much on the agenda. In parallel, we have an Office of Tax Simplification looking at how we can simplify our existing tax advantage share schemes and our unapproved schemes. It came out of ship. Building up to the budget report, where we had this tremendous support from HM Treasury, including a tax relief and a promise to look at other measures. And as I say, there's an implementation group currently working at various ideas. What we've got on the agenda, there will be a UK Employee Ownership Day on the 4th of July, the first, hopefully, Employee Ownership Day in the UK, the first of many. The government is working with others to build up a communications work stream to make sure that employee ownership messages are distributed far and wide. We're joining up Whitehall to make sure that officials are speaking to one another in relation to employee ownership policies. We are producing employee ownership in a box. We're producing standard templates for companies that want to introduce employee ownership. Currently under UK law, employee benefit trusts only have a lifetime of 125 years. Another measure on which we will be consulting is the idea of abolishing that. Pension schemes can last forever, charities can last forever, why not employee trusts? Whole series of publications planned. I mentioned the ACAS guidance on employees wanting to raise the idea of employee ownership with their employers. There's an access to finance forum, which is looking at measures to promote finance. Business rescues, we're going to run a pilot scheme in relation to that area and whether we can generate more interest in business rescue situations. Looking at improving data collection, it's always helpful to have extra data on who's doing what. And again, keeping an eye open on regulatory burdens. Are there any burdens out there that need to be solved? And all of this is building up to me somehow finding the time. My government role is a voluntary one and supposedly part-time. Me finding the time to write a one-year on report, the government has said, yes, it will be held to account. And it will allow me to write a report on how well it has done at implementing my recommendations. Thank you very much for listening to me. I realise you've taken in an enormous amount. I expect the shell shock looks are not the equivalent of me playing rock guitar. It's probably just the case of listening to a tax lawyer for a long time. But anyway, thank you very much. And hopefully there are a few Chuck Berrys in the room now.